The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. SOMEGADGETGUY. The SGG of this horrifically named podcast channel. But the QA is the cool part, because that obviously stands for question and answers. We like to have an interactive conversation, start our morning off right, start our week off right, and follow up on some of the top tech stories that are sort of facing our industry, the things that we want to care about, that we want to sort out our feelers on, make sure we're keeping up with the news as the news cycled. I'm on like three or four cups of coffee. I'm totally wired because the Sony Xperia embargo was at a weird time, and I did kind of stay up later than I probably should have to babysit my first video coming out. Woo! So I hope everyone has had a lovely weekend. We baked some sugar cookies yesterday, and that was delightful. TK Bay, that was very hard. So TK and I seem to be the American bros for talking about Sony phones right now. I am honored to be a part of that conversation for North America, especially a channel my size. It feels pretty good when a company is like, hey, you seem pretty cool. We could work with you. But yeah, TK and I were talking about Xperia 5 yesterday and just like, man, I'm gonna have to stay up late. So, yeah, we've got a lot going on. I'm going to try and keep the news block a little simpler. There were a whole list of stories that I kind of wanted to touch on, but felt like, you know, I don't have a ton to add. Things like the NVIDIA 3080 and 3090 launches, some of the issues with overclocking, some of those graphics cards, the continued news coming out about consoles and some of the issues with shipping them. And really, it was I've got a ton of phones. I have too many phones, and I've got a bunch of other accessories videos that I kind of wish were getting a bit more traction. So I'm going to try and shorten up our news block so we can spend some time. I have the T-Mobile Velvet, so we can go international versus T-Mobile Velvet if anyone's curious about what's going on there. I've got the Xperia 5, and I can finally talk about it, but the Xperia 1 is also in-house again, too. I finally got my hands back on the The Xperia one. And I just thought, you know, like maybe we could keep this a bit more of a chill gadget conversation. There's a sale on the OnePlus 8. There's the announcement of the Galaxy S20 FE. We could still chat out Pixel rumors. I want to leave the gadget block the bigger block. So in the second half of the podcast, if you've got questions, I've got answers. We can really roll on this. Have a good old time talking some tech. We are still going to cover some news. I'm going to try and keep that a bit briefer. And people are saying housekeeping, like 7 minutes. Matt saying 12 minutes and a donkey. Okay. Oh, and TK is in the chat too. So folks, make sure you're hitting up TK for really good, savvy, smart questions about technological products like the Xperia 5 Mark II. Yeah, let's jump into some housekeeping. I'm coffeeed out of my skull right now. I hope you had a lovely weekend. And thank you so much for joining. Again, these are the kinds of conversations I love starting my week off with. So I'm glad y'all are along for the ride. And I'm happy to see so many familiar faces in this live chat. I've already missed my ability to do the romper room of saying everybody's name. Know that I'm watching it and know that it's appreciated that you're in there. And also, huge shout out to Matt Tyler, already gifting subs. I can't thank y'all enough for supporting the production on this channel, on this podcast, and kind of growing our little community here. It's really great to see, and it means a lot to me. So let's knock out some housekeeping. Suku One is saying 5 minutes. That is my goal. I want to be done with housekeeping. So I'm going to scroll through these fast. These are videos that got very little traction on my channel, and it makes me very sad because YouTube used to be a place where I could have kind of a broad gadget conversation, and that doesn't appear to be the case any longer. First and foremost, if you want good video, you need good audio. Rode sent over a kit, the Wireless Go, these cute little square transmitters and receivers so you can hook up wireless audio for your videos, and new accessories. So these are really well-supported microphones. They won't break the bank. They've got great signal with line of sight. And now you also have cold shoe mount, different cabling options, different mic options. It's a really robust ecosystem of audio recording gear. And I did the entire video using those. I think for a future podcast, I'm planning another one of those where I go over to the table and like I go hands on with something in the middle of the podcast, and I'm going to have to go with wireless lavs. So a future episode of this podcast will probably be done all on the Rode Wireless Go. Speaking of audio, not just for recording, you also want to treat your ears to prettier audio. And Phio's BTR5, the cure for a missing headphone jack. This is one of the best Swiss Army knife all-rounder audio gadgets I've ever had the pleasure of reviewing. I was really anxious because I liked the BTR3. I heard big claims about how good the BTR5 was, and I'm really happy that it lived up. It lives up to its reputation. Another Audible technological gadget. I'm really trying to like tie these things together. It's not working. It's funny though. I needed a new keyboard right around the time that MSI was saying, "Hey, do you want to check out our new keyboard?" So I finally replaced that old Rocket, and MSI sent over their GK50 Elite with kale blue switches, and it is super clacky, and I absolutely love it. I love clacky keyboards. It's terrible to use on a live stream or when I'm on a phone call, but it's gorgeous. I love the feel under my fingertips. You can get a much better look at my experiences using the keyboard with a little ASMR recording of me typing. It's real good times. And one of the big videos of last week was talking about dual display. We had a lot of requests for people to do a V60 versus Surface Duo video, and most often with the sort of implied, well, we know you're going to make the V60 the winner. And instead of doing a normal sort of fight for blood showdown kind of video, I really wanted to do more of a conversation about how this is a product segment that deserves to grow. I really feel like there is room in this market for both of these devices or both of these philosophies, and we should be excited to see more options. I'm not really interested in declaring one the winner. I mean, I think it's more, will they be the right fit for your needs? And if you're properly sort of educated on the pros and cons of what a gadget can bring, you're going to be way happier with your purchase. If it's just a popular YouTuber said this has the best specs, you're probably missing out on a solution that is custom fit for your needs. And that's where something like the Duo becomes increasingly more exciting as an offering. So it's a more philosophical conversation than just, this has Snapdragon 865, so it's more powerful than it's the winner. A bunch of people have already done that commentary, and I'm not really interested in that. I really want to talk about what makes this a healthier gadget ecosystem or a healthier gadget landscape. And of course, early this morning, midnight my time, 3 a.m. Eastern, we started a conversation on the Xperia 5 Mark II, and I kind of pulled a Vergara, Josh Vergara, talking about my top five favorite features and then also my top five concerns for the Xperia 5. I like doing this with phones. Like, I did this with the Pixel 4. My top four pros, my top four cons for the Pixel 4, and it's just cute, you know, the Xperia 5. It doesn't work with the Xperia 1. My top one feature, my top one concern for the Xperia 1. But I can do that. I can do a top five list for the Xperia 5. And this is the Xperia 5, and it's gorgeous, and I love it. And it's another interesting part of a larger gadget conversation, and we're going to dig into this. You got questions about it. I got answers about it. I can finally talk about it, but I won't be able to keep, I won't be able to hold on to it for very long. So, let me get out of the way here. Let me just kind of scooch in my chair. I'm going to be like kind of shifty and meerkatty. And let me take a sip of water from this delicious coffee mug here that is all about supporting the headphone jack, because we have premium phones with headphone jacks again. And I'm very excited about that. Let me take a sip. All right. So, that's housekeeping. All of the stories that we're going to be talking about, all of the links are going to be on the show notes page for this episode of the podcast on somegadgetguy.com. You should check out my website, because that's kind of where I put everything that I'm working on. So it's, if you want to keep up with what's going on, somegadgetguy.com. Oh, I almost forgot. We did do a Patreon live stream over the weekend. I've been 2 months off from doing Patreon live streams. It got a little deep. I mean, just it's a good group of tech pals over on patreon.com/somegadgetguy. Some feels were definitely expressed, just some of my concerns and frustrations with the current state of working on YouTube. But one of the great things that came out of that is I think we've got sort of a loose plan in place to start doing a Patreon game night. So if you're on the Patreon and you're not keeping up with the posts on the Patreon, I would appreciate y'all checking back in, because I think we can make this a weekly or bi-weekly affair where we all get together, play some goofy games, and have a good time. So I'm hoping to make that a bit more of a community initiative for having some fun. Okay, now, housekeeping proper over. Dave Burns is all about Among Us. I'm also thinking I'm going to, sorry, just to comment on that. One of the first I want to try is Battlelands, because I can set up a private server for 30 people, and we can all just try and kill each other in a ridiculously cartoony twin stick shooter battle royale. So anyone with a basic phone should be able to jump in. Okay, let's get into the news block. Like I said, DTNL, we're basically going to watch the B movie two times every month. You like jazz? All right, let's get out of that. That's danger. That's danger zone. We've got news to cover, and like I said, we're going to try and keep news a little bit simpler. One of the first ones that I just want to point out, I am bringing this up because this has been a semi-regular topic in the news block for the last couple months. We have a presidential administration that is hypersensitive to criticism. And whenever there's a platform that seems to encourage some kind of discourse that our current political administration, our current presidential administration does not like, we see a lashing out and an attempt at trying to break the protections for those entities and organizations. This is a little different than the Judiciary Committee that we saw, you know, the antitrust investigations for Google and for Facebook and for Apple and for Amazon. This is now coming from Department of Justice and is a follow-up to something we talked about a couple months back. Trump went out and said, I'm going to try and police social media. And he signed an executive order that pretty much everyone laughed at. Like, it was completely toothless that he was going to be able to be in charge of how Twitter and Facebook work. But that wasn't the end of the conversation. So now we're seeing a follow-up from the Department of Justice. Attorney General William Barr is speaking out against Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. I'm not going to go super deep into this. The Washington Post has the full write-up on what's going on here. But we've been talking about Section 230 for around, I mean, I would say on my podcast for the last year. These are the protections that allow online conversations to function. The Communications Decency Act sort of allows for a Twitter or a Facebook to be a platform. And then people post on that platform, but Twitter can't be held directly liable for what is posted on that platform. And I've had frustrations with the current implementation of Section 230, but I also don't have a lot of faith in our current grouping of politicians to intelligently reform with nuance the issues that I've got with Section 230. So, one, I would highly recommend checking out Legal Eagle DJ, the Legal Eagle YouTube channel. He's got a great video sort of breaking down the I mean, it's like a 20-minute video. I mean, this is tech law at the bleeding edge of new technology and law trying to catch up to new technology. But then also, we want to keep an eye on this. Eroding the protections of Section 230 with a bias towards chilling speech is something we should all be concerned about. We should also be concerned about mega big data corporations that get to exist as publishers when they want to, and then as platforms when they need to hide behind a shield. I feel like a Google, a YouTube, a Facebook, they like to have it both ways. They totally don't have any editorial control except for all of the posts that they take down and all of the manipulation of our feed so that we don't get data the way that it's sort of presented to us, that they can kind of manipulate us to stay on platform. And I feel like they shouldn't be allowed to have that kind of dual sword action of being able to not be a publisher and then also be a publisher, protect their interests for their advertisers, but then also claim that we just don't have anything to do with what goes on our platforms. So just to keep an eye on it. I don't have faith in current politicians to do this with nuance. We just need to keep an eye on what they're doing. And then hopefully over the next generation of people, we can come up with the actual legal framework to more to better safeguard consumer interests when it comes to using this big data. Because big data is scary. Oh, LFA Reviews is in the live chat. Hey, Jeff. I caught Jeff's stream Sunday night chat. I don't want to get too like personal or into your ish, especially from having seen your Twitter post about how awesome the Apple Watch was and alerting you to some situations. But I was so glad to see you streaming. I hope you're feeling well. I hope you and the family are doing well and staying out of smoky conditions with everything that's going on up north. And also just to say, like, give yourself some downtime and give yourself some rest. You know, I don't want you to overdo it coming back, but I was so glad to see you streaming again, man. Big, big ups, LFA Reviews. All right. Next story. This is another follow-up. So if you remember at the beginning of all of this shelter-in-place social distancing experimenting that we started at the beginning of 2020, there was a rash of bad information leading to destruction of 5G towers and spreading really bad ideas about diseases and how stuff worked. And this is an ongoing problem that we've got with social media being an echo chamber and being a megaphone for bad actors to spread bad information. And so we actually had, I mean, it was great in the live chat. We had some conversations earlier this year, and there isn't a good answer, but we need to start examining how do we better combat the spread of misinformation. And so a part of this is just the broad sort approach of like hacking away at deplatforming and finding ways of verifying and citing sources so that people can follow up on information. But we need to engage in a whole new generation of social conditioning and reconditioning to get people using social media in ways that are better for them. You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, just recently there was that documentary on Netflix. I can't remember, it was The Social something. I don't know, The Social Problem. I don't know. It's another one of those, like, you know, social media is going to cause the death of our entire society. And to a degree, I kind of agreed with a lot of their thesis points. But a part of this is going to come from reprogramming consumers to have a different relationship with social media. And the funniest part of this is that I kind of feel it's people my age and older that are likely going to need more instruction, and that the people who are younger, I think, will already have a savvier relationship with content online. So when I see stories like this, and again, this is Twitter reporting on their own platform. So let's take this with a rock of salt, a small one, you know, like I'm making a pinch about the size of an American penny, a little pinch of salt. The Social Dilemma. Thank you, Gary, the fireman. Let me get this out of the way here. At least we're seeing some acknowledgement of some of the problems on their platform. So this is coming by way of PC Mag, written up by Michael Kahn. Our Twitter, our read before you retweet function actually works. So I missed the initial rollout for this feature. I missed the initial announcement for it. But Twitter is now going to nag prompt when someone's getting ready to retweet something. And if you're watching this on the live stream, this is from the Twitter press release. Headlines don't tell the full story. You can read the article on Twitter before retweeting. So it's using Twitter's sort of built-in web service so that you can quickly open an article and read it in Twitter before completing that retweet action. So this is from PC Mag. Twitter's experiment to nudge people into reading news articles before sharing them online is moving out of beta to become a permanent feature for all users. The company began testing the function in June with English Android users. It works like this. When attempting to retweet an article you haven't clicked into, Twitter will display a prompt advising you to read the content before circulating it. On Thursday, Twitter said the beta test showed some promising results. The read before you retweet prompts are causing users to open an article link 40% more often than before. Users who open articles before retweeting them have also increased by 33%. So these are encouraging numbers. It's exactly the kind of conversation that I've always appreciated with the group of people that are watching this right now, is we can follow through on tech news stories. And we can use a weekly podcasting format to have conversations about this stuff over longer periods of time. It's getting us untangled from a knee-jerk, reactionary, outrage porn style of news delivery. You know, I saw this headline and it's crazy and I'm upset, and it's already a topic that I'm generally emotionally triggered by. So I'm sharing this with all of my people. And that's one of the ways that a bad piece of information or a bad idea can become that sort of infectious meme of brainworm that spreads like wildfire. And then it's impossibly difficult to walk that bad information back. you know, it can be in a slightly more comical or innocuous form when we talk about people like flat earthers. But then it leads to creating these populations of people on the internet that start acting on bad information, like when we saw 5G towers being destroyed. So little baby steps. I feel like this is one of those things where we get a nag screen when we go to retweet something. Probably effective in the short term. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think that it's going to be... I feel like the more we engage in stuff like this, the more noise we create. And then people just by rote will start tuning out, right? I'm going to retweet this article that someone else shared. Oh, I got this nag screen. I'm supposed to read the article. Whatever. I'm just going to skip through it. I feel like after a point, we'll start to normalize that. We'll start to acclimate to it. And then we'll have to find something else to kind of encourage a deeper level of participation. But at least from the very beginning, those are encouraging numbers. If you see someone, you know, 40% more activity actually driving traffic to websites, that's also another encouraging trend. You know, I think Facebook kind of destroyed the old relationship with readers going to websites, right? Social media kind of decimated that old school idea of, I want to read a PC Mag article, so I go to PCMag.com, instead of, well, I just open up Facebook and then Facebook just starts belching content at me and I don't have to work for anything. I don't even have to go to another button on my web browser machine. That's one of the majors, is like, I feel every news site, every blog, every editorial should be looking at ways that they can better engage directly with their readers and encourage, like, reward the behavior of actually going to that website. And so something like this, where Twitter says, like, hey, you want to read this article, read the article before you share it, in a weird way, that actually kind of helps facilitate that. I mean, it helps kind of repair, kind of staple that bridge back together from the reader going directly to a piece of media. JJ4884, nah, many Android users are using third-party clients, not going to see this feature. I would be very surprised with how effective Twitter was at breaking a lot of my favorite third-party Twitter clients. I'd be shocked if we were seeing a statistically significant number of Android users relying on third-party Twitter apps. Dave Burns, too, people don't read past the headlines anymore. I mean, that's true, but that's what we're trying to correct for. And if there's a way that we can start retraining that behavior, then I think we should try. I'm not saying that this is going to be effective in the long term, but it's at least an acknowledgement that we can try to course correct for it. And Gary the Fireman, because I think, Gary, we're all very much in a similar boat, especially if you're watching a podcast like mine. I have substantially cut back my use of Instagram since the boycott day a couple of weeks ago, and I'm fine with it. F Facebook. I shared a photo of the Xperia 5, and I shared a photo from the Xperia 5, and I think that was my, I think it had been almost a month since I'd shared another image on Instagram. I just don't get the fix. You know, there was a time, like, Instagram was so exciting and fresh and new, and we finally got it on Android, and I was sharing photos, and I was finding ways to, like, upload stuff from Windows phones, because Windows phones had objectively the best cameras, and anyone who says otherwise was foolish, including the creators of Instagram, who tried to weight their service entirely to iPhone users to keep out the Android riffraff. But as soon as they started messing with my feed, killed the immediacy of what I like about that service. And it's like, Twitter has major problems with their platform, but I can still tell it to give me content in chronological order. And that's the only value I still hold to Twitter. YouTube doesn't do it. Facebook doesn't do it. Instagram doesn't do it. As soon as you tell me, we're going to try and trick you into staying on our platform longer, as opposed to, we're going to give you everything you say you asked for when it shows up, I am less interested in your in your service. Nom. Oh, I don't have any followers on Twitter, so nothing changes for me. Hit me up, Nom. I'll follow you. We'll do this. LFA, hashtag riffraff gang. Heck yeah. Mbuku. Mbuk. I don't know how to say your name. I'm sorry. I know I've done that before. Instagram just feels so corporate now. And Gary, Instagram was great until Fakebook bought it. I completely agree. It's just sad. We're seeing like this explosion of TikTok clones right now. Even LinkedIn. This is another story I passed on. LinkedIn is starting a short snippet video sharing feature. Even LinkedIn. So again, I'm finding we have these alternatives, we have these other platforms, and then I really feel that the future of being social is just setting up our own communities privately, you know, where the explosion of services like Discord. My family is talking about setting up a Discord. My sister is into VR gaming. My brother's into tabletop gaming, really hardcore. My mom wants to build a gaming PC just to play Beat Saber. It's pretty funny. One of our platforms might be Discord, just to have a family running chat conversation that isn't tied to text messaging and doesn't get jacked up with the couple iPhone owners who have iMessage and don't seem to get texts reliably. I think future generations, people younger than me, as they're coming up, that's going to be a direction that they seriously start pushing their interactions into. I think they're going to lead the way. I think the rest of us are going to kind of have to, oh, I see what they're doing and I want to be a part of that community and I want to have that conversation. We'll start doing that too. And Nick Fell, you can use something like Telegram. sorry, there were a bunch of there in there. I don't have anyone in my circles of like family and friends. I mean, like, Not obviously, if I were to jump on Telegram, I'd have innumerable people to have conversations with. I just mean like, you know, my grandmother having a different chat app there. But if we were to all agree on something like Discord, where we could jump in and out of voice chat, where we could have just a running log, I something like that kind of made more sense for our family. Matt Tyler is all about Tinder. Which I'm sure, you know, his missus would be interested in knowing about. Walt Samarista, Discord plus Among Us equals fire. JJ4884, any Mastodon users? Any Mastodon listeners? I think I have a Mastodon account. I set it up when I saw it. Oh, man, it was maybe 2 years ago. I haven't checked into it. One of the things that killed me was not having like a clear, easy app, Android client to be able to kind of get the lay of the land. Because there have been a few others. What was the other? The other one that we talked about very briefly last week was like Triller or something. It's like a TikTok clone. So anyway, social media. Still fundamentally broken, absolutely eroding the underpinnings of our society and causing some of the most grievous harm in terms of social development and political discourse and community building, and much the opposite of what social media claims to be protecting. So any ways that we can fix it, we should probably keep those on our radar and also use those as ways that we can have other conversations with our family and friends. And then also encourage your family and friends to take conversations off of Facebook, because it's bad for you. It's bad for your brain. Okay, I do want to cover one more story here for the news block. This is technically kind of more of a gadget block story, but I just think there's an interesting philosophy at play here. So I wanted to include it more in the news block, also because I don't know that it's something that anyone can really buy just yet. So, Young Juan, if you had told him that in his lifetime, he would have the ability to own robots that would vacuum and, you know, cameras that could talk immediately to a pocket computer that was more powerful than the family desktop of that age. And would be, everyone would be linked by this amazing communications network. Very, very excited. Young Juan, like, just hopeful, yearning for the future, wouldn't be able to get here fast enough. If you had told young Juan that as part of your security system, you could buy a little drone, a little quadcopter that would fly around your house and like allow you to see real-time video of what's going on, even when you weren't at home, I mean, like, my mind would have exploded. Yeah, I was the kid who, in the sixth grade, I saved up birthday money to buy a Texas Instruments pocket organizer. And, you know, what did it have? It had like 4 megabytes of addressable storage or something like that. Had a QWERTY keyboard, had a single line LCD display. I was made fun of ruthlessly from grade school through high school for having all manner of different portable electronics and mobile gadgets. Walked around with a PDA and people would like point blank, why do you always need to be able to check your email? Isn't that lame? And was the big old nerd. I mean, like, I have not fond memories of that age. So there's that part of my child voice in the back of my brain that lit up like crazy when I saw Juan is 576 years old. Hey, man, come on. I don't look a day past 300. I feel like I'm 576 years old. But yeah, there was a part of me, and I saw the announcement from Ring. I'm sorry, that was a really long and roundabout way to get to here. But I just wanted to kind of set the stage for why I'm critically excited of the tech and then horrifically terrified of the implications of a company like Amazon having a free roaming camera that can fly around in my home. So Ring, as owned by Amazon, their sort of home automation, home security camera system. This is the Ring Always Home camera. It's a mini little quadcopter. It's got this cute little base. And it, if an alarm is triggered or if a sensor is tripped, this little thing flies out Minority Report style. Someone mentioned it in there, that like the spiders in Minority Report. Who was it? Rosted. Rosted said like the Minority Report spiders. And then it just sort of flies around your home and it can see what's going on. I can't play this video from that's docked on Digital Trends. I'm using John Velasco's article from Digital Trends to show off what Ring is doing here. This is so flipping cool. I remember the early days of drones and quadcopters when they started becoming more consumer accessible. You know, you remember you could go to the mall and there'd be like that kiosk of that one guy who was selling like remote control helicopters. One of my first reviews for a publication that doesn't really exist anymore, but we did these combat RC helicopters. And one of the things that was really cool about it is you would dogfight. And they had these little IR blasters on them, and you would hit their you'd shoot your opponent, and the first time you'd shoot, it would wobble. The second time you would shoot it, it would temporarily remove control from the pilot, and it would dip and wobble more. And then if you hit it a third time, it would sever the connection to the controller, and a sensor would guide the plane in a controlled tailspin down to the ground. And this was 7 years ago. I mean, it was a while ago. This wasn't like fresh hot. I mean, it's not fresh hot tech today. I'm 576 years old. The second I saw that this helicopter could do a guided controlled tailspin, and this was just mall kiosk RC helicopters, and again, not super advanced, amazing, bleeding edge tech. All of these little like mini quadcopters, all these little like Hornet sized drones that you could just kind of buy at a mall stand. seeing something like this is now that next step. Automated. You're not sitting there with controllers trying to fly around your home to see if someone's breaking into your home. It's automatically mapping your house, flying to the sensor, to the location, catching video of it in real time. I think one of the things that is a little problematic is when you see an image like this, I was thinking it would be one of those palm-sized Hornet-style quadcopters. Like, I had one that literally, I mean, it was this little bug of a quadcopter that could easily fit in the palm of one of my Hobbit hands. So you see this image from Ring, and it's $250, and you're like, oh, okay, well, that must be real teeny. That must be real little. But the reality is it's actually pretty big. Seeing this photo of a woman holding it, I don't know what to compare it to. It's bigger than a slice of sandwich bread. Someone help me with a size description. It's larger and thicker than two DVD cases stacked on top of each other. I don't know. It's bigger than I thought it would be, but still the capabilities of this are profoundly cool. But here's the deal. And I don't know if anyone else is sharing my level of paranoia on this. It's the same reason why I'm concerned by Oculus. Like, I don't want to get an Oculus and have it scan my home and have cameras and mics monitoring my behavior and sending that data and telemetry up to Facebook. I don't care that the Oculus is cheap. I don't think that's a good argument, because I feel like it's cheap because a major part of their business model is mapping my behavior and using that as the fuel of their real business model. And I'm super paranoid about it. Like, this hat that I'm wearing right now is internally lined with a high quality tinfoil. So the same thing. I don't like the idea of Amazon Ring devices having kind of purpose-built Amazon functionality. You remember you saw that story, you know, like the Ring doorbell and the Ring security lock, and you could give an Amazon driver a passcode so that Amazon drivers interacting with an Amazon door lock could get into your home and drop off a package. And isn't that so great? And the tech is cool. I mean, that is a cool idea. I mean, I have a pretty good relationship with my post office driver. I don't know that that would be too big a concern. I'd want to work that out and see, like, hey, if I had like a little cubby that would allow you to leave a package in my home, but didn't give you full access to my home, sign me up. I'm in for that. Yes, do that. That's great. But I have this block. There's this moment of tech hesitation when I hear Ring can fly a drone around my home. And I don't want to be that paranoid. I'd really love to believe that we could completely trust these mega big data corporations with the most intimate details of our home living space. And I just can't quite get there. I want to be there. I want the Star Trek future where there's a computer that's just sort of omnipresent and has access to every piece of information about me and everything around me. And I can just call into the air and say, hey, this is the thing I need help with. And then a computer voice, as sampled by Majel Barrett Roddenberry, just pipes up and I can have this great interaction and get meaningful data back. And in the world of Star Trek, where it's this sort of omnipresent computer thing, yeah, that's great. It's a very utopian idea. When that's actually backed up in our real world by companies like Google and Facebook and Amazon, I get a lot twitchier. I have a bigger problem with that. You know, JJ, I mean, I would love this kind of functionality open source. I'm absolutely with you. It's funny that, like, having source code that's worked on by, you know, ostensibly thousands of people around the world, to me seems like it's easier to trust than coming from a proprietary closed source single point of access and from a company like Amazon. Walt Samarista, Amazon would like to know your location. No more once they have these around. TK Bay. Soon, Amazon bedside delivery. I mean, Amazon Prime Plus is someone comes in, tucks you in into bed at night, leaves a little package by your bedside table. Matt Tyler, I'd much prefer Nest cameras, motion detectors, just log into your phone, no drones. There's a part of it, though. I mean, to me, it's just so cool. You know, there's the lobster pot effect. Remember we were talking about, you know, Twitter gives you a nag screen and it's going to be effective for a while and then people are going to tune it out. Security cameras, I feel like, were this step up in home security when they started becoming more affordable. I mean, we've got Arlo's, you know, when you start setting up that kind of stuff, it serves as sort of like a psychological deterrent. Maybe not huge, but like someone, it might give them a bit of a pause if they see all these cameras and they might get, you know, photographed or videoed, you know, committing a crime. But now they've been normalized. Someone's going to steal a package off your porch. They don't care. Someone's going to break into your home. Cameras don't act as the deterrent, as the potential deterrent that they might have. Someone breaks into your home and then they hear like, and this thing comes like flying over to where they broke in, where they tripped a sensor. I feel like the first time someone breaks into a home with a Ring Always Home cam and that drone like flies right up to them and like starts getting video of them committing the crime, I feel like that's going to be a moment of pause. That's going to be a moment of, oh. And then, you know, it'll get sort of, it'll quickly be normalized. You know, we'll quickly acclimate to that. You know, they'll come in and like shoot, you know, like throw something at it or swat at it with like a baseball bat. You know, if they're really savvy, they'll have like a little net of fishing wire and it'll gum up the fans or something. Like it's the arms race, you know, new tech, and then we acclimate to new tech, and then it just sort of becomes background fodder, you know. And that's why, again, the actual hardware here is why I'm so excited. It's who's backing it, and that's what makes me twitchy. Yeah, from Kyoto Santi. Amazon Fit knows your body. Amazon Speakers listens to you all the time. Amazon Ring watches you. Now Amazon drones are going to follow you. From Fat Produce, all the privacy concerns aside, the drone in the house with its constant buzzing would be as annoying as frack. The whole point of this is that it flies, it docks itself, it charges itself. You don't control it or fly it, but really, this to me is more of a get a first person perspective of what's going on in your home when you're not there. So I'm sure, you know, like let's say you're asleep and you hear the drone take off. That could also be another alert or warning that something's going on. But when you're home, I don't think it would be flying around, or at least not automated. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. Simon says Hypno has a toilet paper joke. That was pretty funny. I like it. I'm sorry, I'm just catching up on the live chat here. Geet Madden, this is a great point. We have open source IP camera apps to work with older Android devices. Maybe we can be a start towards an open source future. Oh, Simon says, well, first off, all right, Geet Madden, that's exactly the kind of tech future I want. And for all of us to be just a bit more engaged, to be kind of working towards that a little bit more. I feel like with media literacy and tech literacy is sort of catching up the general consumer populace for some of those ideas, like having more control might be a good thing, not always relying on just auto settings and stuff. It was a huge hurdle just getting IoT devices to not have default passwords that were easy to crack. You know, it takes a generation of this stuff being out in the wild for us to sort of sort out the issues with everyone jumping on this kind of tech. But Simon says Hypno, if they could do this, I'd be all about it. If it has the Ed 209 voice, that will help. Oh, man. Can you imagine you break in, you hear a drone flying around, and then the Ed 209 voice kicks on? That'd be hilarious. Again, it only worked like once, but come on, that'd be awesome. Matt Tyler, until it becomes well known and someone breaks in to steal the drone. Oh, that's bad. All right, let's plug the subreddit. I took longer on news than I thought I would. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception. Some subreddits are about, like, you know, building a community to talk about how cool I am, or how cool the host is, or to share news stories for what's going to be discussed during the podcast. My subreddit is by design. I want it to be a platform for helping promote content that deserves more attention. So especially in the tech space, you know, writers, video content creators, podcasters, people that we feel like they're making good stuff, and we want to try everything that we can as active consumers of their content to try and give them a leg up to promote them more. So if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a small community, but it's growing week by week. Officially broke 1,200 subscribers, where we're at 1,226. So we moved pretty quick. Another like 40 or 50 new subscribers over the last week. And you're going to see a collection of content creators and writers and editorialists and photographers and just folks that are making really cool stuff, but they're not getting helped by the YouTube algorithm, and they're often not shared on larger subreddit communities, because if you try to share something on a larger subreddit, they're probably going to take it down if it's not the most immediately popular from a huge YouTuber kind of content. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. These are the top stories posted. A number one with a bullet. I win. Matt Tyler can suck it. Ha ha ha. And I didn't win with an article. I didn't win with a video. I won with a photo of a butterfly. So, Matt Tyler's mad. Ha ha. We promote a community where we like to upvote, not downvote. So if you want someone else to be in the top spot, you got to jump in, participate. Don't be stingy with clicking the up arrow. But we want everyone on this site, on this subreddit, to get a bump. Actually, I got to upvote him. So I took a photo with the Xperia 1 Mark II. It wasn't even with the Xperia 5. Xperia 1 Mark II. Off the cuff, it took me minutes to sidle up to this butterfly and not scare it away. And it's just such a lovely photo. I just love Sony's color science. It's just so pretty, and it looks like an old photo. It doesn't look like a hyped up HDR unicorn puke mess. I'm just so happy with it. And it got some traction. So I win for the week. In the number two spot, we've got Adam Reviews Tech. This is a channel with 700 subscribers, less than 1,000 subscribers. Took the number two spot by looking at the Pixel 4a. A month with the Pixel 4a, is this the new best budget phone? And that question, I would say, is answered in the affirmative. I think many people would look at the Pixel 4, oh, especially in North America. Pixel 4a is one of the best budget options. And then in the number three spot, oh, punchable face dude who likes to wear hats, the Fio BTR5 review, the cure for a missing headphone jack by myself. So I took number one and number three. I love it. So in number four, my brother in arms, Bored at Work, taking a look at the LG Wing for gaming. He's one of my favorite channels to follow for gaming content. It's Bored at Work and TK Bay. If they do a video on gaming, I'm going to watch it. I just upvoted this. Why is this not Oh, it's Reddit's being dumb. Tech PhD is in the number five spot, looking at budget EDC 2020 or back to school as a medical student and looking at what tech he's using to go back to school. And then following that up, we've got Coffee Talkin' Tech, 29 subscribers doing a $550 gaming PC build in late 2020. And I'm seeing some Ryzen logos and some AMD kit. We've got Erica Griffin, Surface Duo, Above the Fold, Duo versus Galaxy Z Fold 2. She has been tearing into the Microsoft Surface Duo. And the thumbnail for this is Duo does not suck. So again, I very much appreciate Erica's commentary, and I feel like a lot of my review style was kind of inspired by how she tackles long-term reviews on gadgets. But it's been really interesting watching her compare and contrast two very different solutions for folding up a phone. LFA Reviews, SoundPete's H1. Mr. Tech Rant talking about the Galaxy S20 FE. We've got Lover of Tech, Ben, checking out the Z Fold 2, his first impressions on a $2,000 folding tablet. And then Issa Does Tech Realme 7 camera tour and unboxing with seven dogs. She got seven dogs to unbox and test the camera on the Realme 7. So there's just it's just a wonderful community. You're going to see content here that is not getting the heavy promotion that YouTube is going to try and put in your main feed. We have Tick Watch reviews, an Asus laptop review. We've got TK Bay looking at the Tab S7, my Rode wireless mic video. It's just really wonderful kind of seeing a broader collection of tech commentary and not relying on just everything being Samsung and Apple. I mean, I'm already seeing rumors on what next year's phones are going to do. And you're like, we haven't finished 2020, folks. Like, we're still in it. Saeed, it was just a photo. So if you're going to follow anyone on Twitter, Saeed Ted, he's been doing daily recaps of the top stories on Glowing Rectangles. Highly recommend giving him a follow and just keeping up with what's going on there. And it's been greatly appreciated. Again, this is a totally grassroots, organically grown community of people that are sharing and upvoting and supporting. And that kind of participation is critical. I keep whinging on about this. You know, what YouTube wants to serve you isn't really real. And there is a much larger and much broader conversation happening. So if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and you've never been before, you will find a content creator you've never seen from YouTube, promoted by YouTube, and you're going to love what they have to offer. At this point, it's almost a guarantee. Like, if I could do a money back for you not spending any money to go check out my subreddit, it's really exciting to see week by week, subscriber by subscriber, post by post, how much this is growing and really coming together as a platform for sharing and supporting. That's what we're all about. We've got people in this. We've got TK Bay, LFA Reviews, Matt and Sam. We've got folks that are making stuff, and that's critical. If you want cool stuff to watch and cool stuff to read, you've got to support it any way that you can. So, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. Gadget Block. I want to fly through one quick story here. If anyone were curious this isn't a big deal. I don't need to gild this lily. The OnePlus 8's on sale. The OnePlus 8 Pro and the OnePlus 8 are on sale for $100 off. We're right on the heels. We're right before the OnePlus 8T launch. And I kind of feel like at $899 for the 256 gigabyte, 12 gigs of RAM version of the OnePlus 8 Pro, that's not a bad deal. We won't see, I don't think we'll see the same kinds of sales on this phone that we might on, say, a Samsung, like a Galaxy S20 Plus. But there are some things about the OnePlus 8 Pro that I still feel are critically underrated For $9.99 at the beginning of this year, this was one of the most brutal competitors, and still I think has probably the best, single best main camera sensor on any phone on the market right now. Just weighing all the pros and cons, price performance, yada, yada, yada. That larger 48 megapixel image sensor is real good. Real good. Even if OnePlus's software can be a little flaky, camera flaky sometimes. $100 off. It's a baller phone. I mean, it's basically feature complete for what we would consider a flagship glass on glass smartphone sandwich. So it's worth checking out. Just give it a look. I mean, it's on Amazon. Even the OnePlus store on Amazon has it for $100 off. It's good. Excuse me. So, I'm gonna leave it up to the chat. So get ready to, it's Thexy Pat. Wait, are you saying a OnePlus phone has good cameras now, or is it just less bad? Well, first of all, if you go to patreon.com/somegadgetguy, there's like a 30-minute video where I ran the OnePlus 8 Pro cameras. If you can't talk about the cameras in a variety of shooting conditions, comparing raw performance, HDR performance, low light, night mode, and really like talk about what that platform has to offer without making it an implied comparison to an iPhone, right? Because everyone loves to do that. Like, oh, well, I took two photos and like I'm way familiar with the Galaxy and I'm really not familiar with the OnePlus, and the OnePlus photos just aren't as good. The OnePlus 8 Pro camera, again, some OnePlus software jank. Always, always on a OnePlus camera. The pros and cons for me outweigh the potential issues that someone might encounter with some of the HDR oversaturation. Like, the hardware on tap delivers a photographic and cinematic video look to your content that can't be replicated on smaller sensors. So it's not as it's never as cut and dry as someone who dedicates a minute or 2 minutes of a full phone review to camera footage where they went out and they took like an awkward photo of a fire hydrant and then they're talking about, oh, the saturation. Y'all know me better than that. So if you really want the scoop, I mean, you can dig deep. The OnePlus 8 Pro camera is worth a lot more discussion than what people gave it at the beginning of the year. Everyone got hyped up on, oh, OnePlus now sells a phone at $9.99. That's too expensive. Without actually looking at what you got for $9.99. Because the phone's a monster. I mean, it's a monster. And you compare it with other devices at around $1,000. And it's a fair comparison. So, sorry, I was going to leave it up to the chat, and I should have said this before commenting on it's Thexy Pat. And I'm not trying to pick on you, Pat. It's just I'm really over this, oh, OnePlus cameras are garbage. They haven't been. I'd say since the OnePlus 6, OnePlus cameras have actually been price performance competitive and often punch above their price tags. And I'm real over this lowest common denominator, I can only trust a Pixel or iPhone experience. And we're going to be talking about that because I also like Sony phones. And I love watching content creators who shoot 4K video on Sony Alphas talking, well, these cameras just aren't as good. They need to be gooder. If they were gooder, then they'd be worth it. Now, let me show you how awesome my bokeh is on my Sony Alpha. BS. Lame. Sorry. What do we want to talk about first? Galaxy S20 FE impressions, because I don't have one and Samsung's not going to send me one. Do we want to talk about the Velvet on T-Mobile, or do we want to jump into the Xperia 5 Mark II? I'm gonna drink some water here to keep my voice from completely failing on me. All right, got to vote for Velvet. Got to vote for Xperia. Two votes for Velvet. S20e Velvet, Xperia FE Velvet. Matt Tyler says onions because he's crying because he can't get dual screen phones. Velvet, 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 velvet. Okay, let's kick off with the velvet. I'm going to be putting out a full sort of video look at what's going on. This is the T-Mobile version of the Velvet, and I am so excited to have some processor competition in North America. So the international version, and it's the proud of me moment where I got that real special pretty reviewer kit from LG, and I got the jewel, the emerald green. This deserves to be like in a glass case under museum lighting. It really is one of the prettiest phones of 2020. Makes me crazy anxious to use it out of a case because of the curved glass on both sides and this super thin rail that you hold it from. This has never left the gadget lab naked. It uses cases or the dual screen display. Sorry. International Velvet, $765 with 5G support. So this is Qualcomm's mid-ranger chipset. On T-Mobile, interestingly enough, this is using a MediaTek. This is the Dimensity 1000C. And the Dimensity 1000 is MediaTek's top-of-the-line processor. I don't know if the C is a different tier or if it's just some additional add-ons for supporting LG's, hardware. Because supposedly this will do things like support dual display. MediaTek gets kind of a bad rap in this industry because people will see, well, this is MediaTek's top of the line, and it's nowhere near as good as Qualcomm's top of the line. So all I care about is the biggest synthetic Geekbench score that I can get, and it's not good enough. It's not good enough for the monies. And again, techies have gotten real lame at digging any deeper, right? Very limited scope of how we talk about gadgets. Is it the bestest? Well, I only deserve the bestest. If we're looking price performance, this is the least expensive version of the Velvet in North America. It's $588 full MSRP on T-Mobile, and it's the most powerful. It's got the best scores for single core, the best scores for multi-core, and a GPU score almost twice as good as the 765 version of the Velvet. That is really exciting to see. Is just in a straight up processor race, getting some competition, price performance is what we're critically after. I can spend a little less and get a little more, and we have a company that is able to shake up the Qualcomm monopoly in the United States over Android devices. We don't want one company ruling that space because that company gets lazy. The 765 is a perfectly capable chip for daily driver stuff. It's good. I mean, I don't have complaints with how the Velvet performs. It's just a little irritating that this is the new for 2020 mid-range processor that still pretty much loses to the two-year-old premium chipsets like the 845. It'd be nice to see Qualcomm step up, but they don't have any incentive to because they don't have any competition. So when MediaTek comes in with a Dimensity that, dollar for dollar can significantly outperform Qualcomm's mid-range, we should be very excited because that should also mean that a Snapdragon 775 next year should be more price performance comparable. If Qualcomm just kicks back and says like, no, we're going to just keep slow playing the mid-range, which is the most valuable part of this game, where Apple is dropping A13s and A14s into phones that are going to be cheaper than a lot of our Android mid-rangers, what are we doing? So if we don't have competition, then there's nothing to spur Qualcomm to move on. T-Mobile has one of the prettiest phones of the year. It's $588 for a 5G capable handset. There are some differences. As I mentioned, like the Dimensity 1000C is supposed to support dual display. It does not support the current Velvet dual display case. These don't talk to each other, although the charging pass-through does work. So I can put it in this case, and I can hook up the little magnetic adapter, and I can charge, but there's no activity for second screen. Happily, it does. I don't think I have one. Oh, I do. Nope, I don't. Oh, I do. It does support Wacom pens, so you do get active stylus support. So, you know, $588, it's roughly as powerful, maybe slightly more powerful than a Snapdragon 845, and you can make it a Note Lite competitor by adding a Wacom pen. And this combo right here is really good if you like stylus-enabled handsets. The other concerns and things that I'm going to be pointing out in the full video, using a different chipset means you get different internal processing. Camera performance is a little different. Post-processing on JPEGs is visually different. How the color science works, how the phone meters, how the white balance engages. It is the most powerful version of the Velvet, but there are some trade-offs in using different internals that LG is working really hard to try and minimize the differences. They want a Velvet to feel like a Velvet, but you can't completely get away from that. Samsung owners know this well. I mean, you look at the differences between a Samsung powered by a Samsung processor versus a Samsung powered by a Qualcomm processor. There's always going to be some delta of difference. No matter what Samsung does to try and make them feel the same, they're always going to feel a little different. And the same thing happens here. The photography is probably one of the bigger concerns, but it becomes a little less of a concern for the right consumer when app launch times are all just a little bit quicker. Multitasking is all just a little bit smoother. Performance is just a little bit snappier. I mean, it's not profound. They do want the phones to feel comparable, but side by side, you know, I launch the same game on both phones and the Velvet loads it up just that little bit quicker. I go to render video and the T-Mobile Velvet renders video significantly faster than the International Velvet. It is kind of fascinating. It's an interesting turn from LG. LG in 2020, their whole pivot is price performance, consumer, focusing on consumers, making these as sort of modular platforms where you buy a phone and the phone is a phone, is a competitive phone. Like, this is still in that ballpark where, you know, like a 5G Pixel, a Galaxy A71, it still, I think, throws some performance and some competitive metrics against this newly announced Galaxy S20 FE. You know, I think the FE wins in more, you know, sort of head-to-head showdowns, but you could pick up this phone and still make an argument for it, and that it's cheaper than the FE. When we start putting all of those bits together, this strategy from LG is, I think, a lot savvier than what we've seen in years past. What makes me critically excited is LG reading the room, right? They don't get the same kind of preferential treatment from reviewers. They probably don't have as close a relationship with Qualcomm to get like that early batch of new processors or to get better mid-ranger gear. And seeing a company as big as LG, number three in the United States, and makes way more of their money on phones in the entry level and mid-range, you know, like Stylo 6 and K-Series, that's LG's bread and butter. So to use MediaTek in the phone that's probably going to sell more over the life cycle of these phones is really interesting. That is a very interesting commentary on the current state of our wireless market. Let me scroll through some of these up here real quick. Dave Burns talking about, like, you know, like AMD processors, right? sitting there and saying like, oh, Snapdragon 865 is the bestest and I need the bestest, then you're missing, you know, it's like Intel versus AMD. You know, it's can you come in at a price that matches a certain or beats a certain level of performance, and then it's a better buy. NOM and ER 1980, you know, image processing, battery life, modem quality, they would all be an interesting comparison. And I'm going to be talking about that. The video is going to dig a little deeper into all of that, but it's still, as soon as you change chipset, you have to expect that some of those things will change. You know, a manufacturer of a phone, they put a camera on a phone, and then they lean on a lot of Qualcomm to finish off how that photo is going to be served up to the consumer. And so MediaTek, it's a different stack. It's different hardware. That will change. It's interesting to see how it changed, but yeah, it does change. JJ4884. So this is what's tricky. JJ's asking, what about signal strength? Qualcomm is king in the US due to spectrum, but does it support 5G? I cannot directly compare the two Velvets for 5G. My international version of the Velvet doesn't support any American 5G that I can try. And I have the T-Mobile version, and I'm a Fi subscriber, which piggybacks on T-Mobile's network. So I can see what they're doing for 5G on the T-Mobile Velvet, but it's not going to be a head-to-head comparison. It's also going to make the battery conversation trickier, because 5G eats a bit more of your power than where we were with LTE modems. So that's also going to be something I can't directly comment on. It, you know, is like, oh, I got so many hours of screen on time, and oh, this MediaTek doesn't get as good a battery life. Well, I'm comparing it against a phone that kind of only works on a few bands for LTE in the United States, which would have lower power draw and lower power requirements. So unfortunately, I will be looking at this, especially as it compares to like other 5G phones. But I can't do a one-to-one with the international Velvet versus the T-Mobile Velvet. And there isn't a 5G unlocked. So it's not like I could take an AT&T Velvet and compare it, or the Verizon Velvet is a UW version. That's also a different phone with different antennas and different radio management. It's not one-to-one. It's not directly comparable. So from NOM, it would be nice to see Pixel phones on a Dimensity like the 1000C or the 1000 Plus. Yes, it would be nice to see Pixel straying from Qualcomm too, but what I'm most hopeful is that Google just makes their own chips. You know, again, if Apple, I said Google and like three phones on my desk lit up. If Google learns anything from Apple, it's that maybe rolling your own custom silicon might be a better idea for that long-term support and value add. So from Dave Burns, maybe the brain in the case needs a firmware update. It could be the case, it could be the phone, or it could just be, unfortunately, whatever they use to license that functionality might not be cross-compatible, and you might need a proprietary T-Mobile dual display case to work on the Velvet. Unfortunately, I don't know until we get more word from T-Mobile or from LG. So Simon says, Hypno, no dual screen for Dimensity Velvet. No dual screen currently. I don't know that it's going to get one. They list it, MediaTek is even listing it as a feature, but I don't know. I don't know if we'll really get one. And again, if we do, it'll still be sold as a separate accessory. I think the idea of bundling dual displays is probably going to end. It's a case, it's an accessory. It's not going to be a part of the phone. So we probably won't see as much like, you know, yeah, you buy the phone and you get the case for free. Those kinds of deals, I think, are too confusing for consumers. From Dave Burns, I'd like to see LG switch to Dimensity full time. It'd be cool if any company could. It's not to say that I don't want to see, you know, companies using Qualcomm's top tier. But if we're complaining about component costs and how expensive Qualcomm has made their products and their parts, how frustrating it's been when the Snapdragon 855 had an on-chipset modem for LTE, and how Qualcomm pulled that out of the 865 to force an additional component purchase. So even if you didn't want to turn on the 5G in your 865 powered phone, you still had to buy a separate modem component that lived off of the chipset. There was no need for that. I mean, to me, that was leveraging their near monopolistic stance in the market to force a more expensive purchase price, component price. Qualcomm can't do that as easily when, especially in the mid-range, we've got other options. And so let's say, you know, there's like a 10% delta. Let's say Qualcomm modems perform 10% better. If we're matching prices and we can keep a parity with, you know, performance, with battery life, and MediaTek can make a few more inroads, Qualcomm will have to compete. You know, it's not going to be the 875s that keep Qualcomm, you know, iterating on processor design. It's going to be the 700 series. Pixels are going to be 700 series. A series are going to be, Galaxy A series are going to be 700 series. You know, mid-ranger phones that consumers can actually afford are going to be 700 series. And those phones are also going to have to go up against Apple A14s. So it really doesn't benefit Qualcomm for them to keep slow playing development on the 700. Where the 700 can't outperform an 845, that's silly. I'm just going through. Walt Samarista audio performance would also be different, I suppose. We're going to be talking about that headphone jack for sure. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hello, my name is Martin, and I run the Tech Altar YouTube channel. I talk about tech, obviously, but instead of focusing purely on the devices themselves, I mostly analyze the companies, their business and marketing strategies, as well as the industry trends that shape the gadgets we all love. I studied business, I worked for a couple of tech companies like Oppo in China, for example, and I'm building my own tech startup on the side right now, so I really like talking about these topics. And if you enjoy zooming out and trying to see the bigger picture as well, you can find me by searching for Tech Altar, that's A-L-T-A-R, on YouTube, and you can also come say hi to me on Twitter as well. Thanks, Juan.
We got a conversation going on. I mean, it's the back and forth. I'm planning an editorial on this. It's going to be kind of cranky, which is par for the course for me. But we're looking at how manipulated our social media is. We're looking at how gamed the YouTube algorithm is. And we're also looking at manufacturers getting really savvy. So a couple people in the chat are talking about, like, you know, like unbox therapy. And how Lou has done videos sort of unboxing Samsungs. He'll call a Note a near-perfect phone. But at the same time, then we'll see him do obviously sponsored content to promote LG. You know, he was one of the presenters for the LG Wing. We're going to see this weaponized quickly. And I feel like Microsoft was well ahead of the curve in 2020. If you know, you're coming out with a phone like the Duo, and you know that a bunch of reviewers can't be trusted to really give it a fair shake, you come up with an embargo that prevents them from talking about any of the things that you know they're going to criticize. And that's exactly what Microsoft did. Now, when I say things like that, people get real bristly, like, oh, Microsoft's cheating the system. But no, YouTube has created an echo chamber where only the most popular products can be reviewed fairly, and everything else that's less popular is going to be reviewed as lesser than. And it has nothing to do with the merit of the device. So if you're a Microsoft and you know that the initial burst of traffic on the Duo is going to be the big traffic, you tie up YouTubers. You turn them into influencers like they claim they aren't. Oh, I'm a reviewer. I'm not an influencer. No, you are. But you tie them down. You don't let them move on. LG's strategy has gotten a lot savvier. They're dumping way more money into sponsoring content on these larger channels than trying to get reviews. Sending the device out means they will immediately be lesser than one of their major competitors, like a Samsung. And look at where we were at the beginning of the year. Oh, I've got this, where is it? The V60, and it's big, and, they're not doing anything that I think is worth it. It's a 1080p screen, and it doesn't matter that it's way cheaper than a Galaxy S20. I mean, they're just not, and I can't think of anything to do with a dual display. Who would even really use a dual display? Now that the Galaxy Fold 2 is out, I think it's really cool on the Fold that you can set the angle of the screen to any angle to watch a video in half the screen. But I can't possibly imagine anything that I'd want to do with a dual display V60. LG only started getting some more positive commentary when Velvet came out and it was real pretty. And so there was a price performance thing here. Like, okay, some of this makes sense. Lots of people still complaining about the case. But now that the Duo is out, oh, now suddenly LG dual display, well, this is better. It's cheaper. I mean, the Velvet is practically the same thing as a Duo, even though it's not at all. It's not even, it's like completely different solutions and options. So when we see that the review game is so unfairly weighted, and that we know, we can predict. I wrote that editorial for Windows Central, and I predicted every single negative talking point before the phone was out, before the Duo was out. And I was completely accurate in all the ways that people were going to slam it without ever really giving it a fair daily driver use. Manufacturers are going to start playing the game. They're going to start playing the system. And you're going to see everything that I've been saying for the last 2 years and how manipulated this is. When I left Pocket Now, because we were only going to do real coverage on popular phones and we were going to start scaling back on less popular phones, I was in pitch meetings where it's like, hey, these camera reviews are great, but you know, we should only really do camera reviews on Samsung and Apple. Those are the reviews that make us the most money. So we shouldn't do any kind of journalistic due diligence for comparing other devices. The only narrative that makes sense for us is Sam Apple. I've been saying this, and I've been repeating it. And especially if you're in this live chat, you've heard me whinge on about this before. But you're going to see this get played hard. Stricter embargoes, more limited access, more limited time, paying directly for sponsors. Why send a phone that's just going to get panned when you can just pay them to say nice things about your brand and they'll do it? And so, I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, like, oh, well, we need to be upset with reviewers. No, the problem is YouTube. Every time I log into YouTube, it tells me how my videos aren't doing as well. And basically, that's to say, we're not going to send your videos out to people who are subscribed to your channel. Same thing with Facebook. Oh, you've got all these subscribers, but, you know, they're not going to see your post unless you pay us. Wouldn't it be great if all of the people that followed you on Facebook could see your posts? Well, too bad. I guess you'll just need to give us more money. It's all digital extortion. YouTube only wants me to make the most search popular tentpole trending topics videos. That's it. And it's conditioning an entire group of reviewers. It becomes a force feedback. It becomes a cycle. That's what happens. Nick Fell, hashtag some soapbox guy. You know, me? Rant? Why don't we use this? Simon says, oh, wait, no. Who said it? JJ, 4884. So is the Walt Mossberg model dead? the Walt Mossberg model didn't survive into the end of Walt Mossberg. What I want to point to for Mossberg was, while I felt he was internally consistent, I felt he started to take his role as a tastemaker too seriously. And you lose the thread of... You lose the idea of reviewing a gadget for what it is when you're too concerned about trying to predict the popularity of something. And I think Walt even fell for this towards the end of his journalistic career in tech, you know, especially, what was it, the Recode interviews. He'd sit down with an industry titan and grill them and talk about how they'd let him down in the past. And that's tastemaker. That's not reviewer. I would say that model's been dead for a while. When I first started in tech commentary, it was always the idea that your most popular gadgets would get big traffic, and that would subsidize the costs for reviewing less popular gadgets, but we'd still get sort of a more even commentary on what was going on. And I would say over the last 5 years, that's almost completely eroded. I can put out one video complaining about Apple, and it will get four times the traffic on YouTube than a series of videos on a less popular phone. If I didn't have it on just launch day, the full review after a week under embargo, that video is dead. It's not paying. It's not getting traffic. I can't really use those metrics to get sponsorships. You know, they want to see huge numbers. But if I want to do my due diligence in taking time to use a phone, it's not trending anymore. It's a dead topic. And with very little exception to that rule, that's the general layout that we see for most of the audiences that follow channels my size. You know, if I had 5 million subscribers, it would be putting that content under more people's noses, and I would have a completely different relationship with YouTube. The fact that I only have 100,000 subscribers means I'm basically irrelevant unless an outside force from YouTube blows my video up. And then YouTube has to pay attention to that. And then YouTube will do a better job of sharing my video with my subscribers. And then some additional traffic coming from outside my subscriber base. So, the entire system, I mean, gaming the algorithm or appeasing the algorithm is basically the same thing. You're not holding to an editorial honesty. You're not holding to an editorial consistency. You're doing whatever YouTube will tell you is more popular to get better metrics. And my channel is a great example of how a channel falls apart when you don't play that game. And welcome to my podcast on Twitch. Who wants to stop listening to me complain about algorithms and would rather talk about the Xperia 5 Mark II? Does anyone want to talk about the Xperia? Is this phone dead now? I mean, the embargo lifted 10 hours ago. So basically it's all talked out. There's nothing anyone could ever want to say more about this. YouTube is going to declare this over. It's a done topic. We're over this, right? I mean, you know, this phone has been in pre-release. This is pre-release hardware, pre-release software, and has been in reviewers' hands for about 2 weeks. I got almost 2 weeks with it. So, I mean, obviously, that's everything we would need for a comprehensive review, right? All those people out there talking about reviews, this is not how the phone will be sold to consumers, but we can have the full word on what's going on with the Xperia 5, right? Right? All right, so all crappiness aside, again, I'm being snarky, and like I said, I'm coffeed out of my gourd, so I'm even amazed that I'm this functionally coherent at this point. This is a damn fine phone. I very much enjoy what time I've had with the Xperia 5 Mark II. I have a few concerns. There are some pros and cons, and every device has pros and cons. But Sony's strategy and working the premium side with the acknowledgement, we are not talking about a daily driver phone here. And whereas getting the Xperia 1 back in-house also, heavily reinforcing this entire conversation needs to be viewed through the lens of these products displacing other gadgets. And I don't feel that gets enough commentary. I feel like tech reviewers pick up a $1,000 phone. This is $950 pre-order on B&H right now. I'll share you the links. I don't make any money off of a B&H affiliate partnership, but the links are there. You can click on them. $950. And I feel like tech reviewers pick this up, use it as a basic smartphone, and then still think that, well, you have this phone, but you also need a tablet or a laptop or a tablet and a laptop or a laptop and a desktop, and that they do real computing off of those products, and that I still need my Sony Alpha, and I still need my laptop, and I still need my MacBook, and I still need all these other things. So this phone isn't worth it for $950. I want to see more premium tier experiments that can start pushing us to displace the need of carrying other expensive products. So I don't keep a Sony Alpha in-house. Last Christmas, I shot on an a7 III. The Sony Alpha a7 III is a gorgeous camera. And when I fire up the... I don't know why my fingerprint didn't work that time. When I fire up an Xperia and I've got this really awesome... And you're getting a photo of my ear there. Let me just kind of angle it. Let me just hold it up a little closer and... Dude, this, the lighting is all terrible. When I see this kind of a camera interface, this makes me super happy. And for all those people that shoot on Sony cameras and then review phones and talk about how this is tricky to use or it's not as good because it doesn't have unicorn barf HDR, I find that commentary to be more than a little disingenuous. I find that to be not a fair assessment of what this phone is trying to accomplish. If you want the most effortless HDR photos, and that's all you're going to do, all you're going to do is push the shutter button, go buy a Pixel. This is easy. $350, and you've got probably the best implementation of only pushes the shutter button. And you probably have really rough calluses on your knuckles from just dragging them on the ground. I'm absolutely kidding. We're talking about a $950 phone that I feel lives up to $950 worth of use when you drive it that hard. And that to me is what's been so exciting about Sony's strategy right now. Let me go through some of these. Because I want to make this a little bit more of a conversation than me just monologuing, because I'm going to have videos out. I have the top five best and worst. I'm going to have an Xperia 1 versus Xperia 5. Finally able to finish my camera review. so we'll be able to play with this. You'll hear from me more, but I want to answer specific questions. Nick Fell, for the same price as the 5 Mark II, the 1 Mark II is available lightly used. What kind of person is each phone for, and what should I get if I'm an audiophile that reads ebooks? So on Wednesday, I'm going to be doing a deeper breakdown, Xperia 1 Mark II versus Xperia 5 Mark II. I would love to just outright answer that question right here for you, but I feel like that's going to be a better examination when I can really kind of lay out my points in a more structured video. But I feel Sony's strategy here between these two phones is to use the slight differences in size and form factor to accomplish slightly different consumer concerns, right? So you're sacrificing display resolution, which I feel most of the people in my live chat probably fine sacrificing display resolution for a faster refresh rate. Those slight focuses on gaming versus content creation. It's all very, very subtle, but using both of them, I feel like Sony is forking just a little bit more between these two lines, who they might be for. So that'll be a a more specific part of the conversation when I get to when I get to that video. From Gabaletta, I've seen editorials praising the Xperia 5 Mark II coming from the same outlets that panned the Xperia 1 Mark II. And isn't that the way? Like, look at what 2020 has done to us. You know, like LG, the beginning of the year, oh, they can't do anything right. And oh, these are just gimmicks. And who wants gimmicks? LG at the end of the year, Velvet's a pretty good buy. And wow, look at the LG wing. How exciting. Sony, same thing. Oh, the Xperia 1, the camera's like really hard to use and it doesn't have auto HDR that's as good and it's not as good and it's not as worth it. And I guess if you like a headphone jack, now Sony at the end of the year, it has 120 hertz. From Michael, Xperia 5 Mark II, how do you even say that? Just buy a Galaxy S20 Ultra 5G instead. Oh, that's funny. Dave Burns, if all you need for your phone is for communication, then the Pixel 4a or the TCL are more than enough. I mean, we've got some great options. And I'm not trying to slag that off. I really want people to spend less on covering the basics. And I'm so tired. I mean, like, going back, I had that wacky photo of a butterfly. Let me screen share this one more time. This is coming from the Xperia 1. It's not coming from the Xperia 5, but it's very similar main sensor camera performance. Here's the butterfly. And you can see, this is shooting into the sun. The sun is right here, just outside of the frame. And so the sunlight is coming through this butterfly. I would expect in a photograph that parts of that would clip out. You won't have a uniform blue sky. A sky should have a gradient, especially when light is coming in at an angle. And then we click on this and we open it up. And even this is only a 12 megapixel shooter, right? So all those people like, oh, I can't believe Sony's only putting a 12 megapixel shooter in there. And the clarity and the detail as it nailed the focus. I mean, Sony autofocus is disturbingly, concerningly good. It's like seeing Terminator vision when you see those little focus indicators fire up and how light is passing through this, but it's not clipping details in the wing. And then parts of the wing that are in shadow are still perfectly resolved. The antenna are gorgeously captured, but you can see the focus fall off. The depth of field from the back of the butterfly through the antenna is already creamily bokeh-licious falling off. We're talking a millimeter of difference here. Is such razor sharp performance. This looks like a photo. This doesn't look like a social media post. If you want your phone to perform like a camera, that shouldn't be dismissed. That shouldn't be talked down. I grew up on old school DSLRs. I shot film on Canon. I moved over to Canon digital cameras. I'm now on a Panasonic and I absolutely hate the autofocus on it. You saw when I moved the phone closer, I manually focused the camera. There are different wants and needs. And just because an iPhone can do real pretty HDR now, doesn't mean that's the only way to produce a photograph. And I look at that photo of a butterfly and it's so simple. It's a little washed out, but it's a photo. It feels like a camera took that. It doesn't feel like a phone took that. And the psychology behind that is very important to me as I like to control what the output of my photos and video are to look like. JJ4884, have there been any updates on your last Xperia? Yeah, Sony's are actually pretty well supported. They won't ever be leading the pack on major OS updates, but let me see. I believe I'm on August or September for the Xperia 1. The Xperia 5 is kind of an unknown because this is pre-release hardware and software. Let me get into software, about phone, Android 10, and August. Yeah, it's on the August security patch. So I think they're probably also kind of like OnePlus now, where it's like an every other month. But I remember getting security updates 3 years in on my XZ1 Compact. And my Xperia 1, the one that I'm loaning from Becca, she sent me her Xperia 1, and it's been getting updates too. So again, if you check out the Sony Xperia subreddit, they've been well supported. Vazicose 8 asking if it's got 4K 60 on all three lenses. It does not. As soon as you switch over to a 4K 60 frame per second timeline, you can only shoot from the main sensor. But I also kind of like that it locks you. I don't like when you do that on an LG and then it changes the frame rate when you change camera sensors. The Sony Pro app says, oh, you can't do it. Shoot a different project, change the project setting. It would be nice if all four cameras could shoot 4K 60, because the selfie shooter is pretty weak. But no, only the main sensor. It's a Sony Alpha in that regard. The Sony engineers are focusing on that main camera performance. From Saeed, how is the Sony fingerprint sensor compared to LG's optical sensor? So this isn't the fastest fingerprint sensor I've ever played with. It's on the power button. But just the fact that it's hardware and it's tactile means very much like why I prefer the iPhone SE. I'm pulling it out of my pocket and my thumb is on the sensor before I'm like trying to feel a featureless screen or hold it up for face unlock. That tactile relationship is greatly preferable to me than having an in-display sensor. Against LG, it is a little bit faster. I don't think it's as quick. I would say the OnePlus sensor is probably just as fast, maybe a little faster. So it's like in-display has caught up a little when it comes to the speed by which you can get into the phone, even if those optical sensors are a little less secure. But I'll take a hardware dedicated fingerprint sensor any day of the week. From, I don't know, is this Rubenevolent. Have there been any heat issues? Sony's have gotten way better behaved for managing thermals. So I shot a really heavy day in high 80s here in Southern California. That's 80 degrees Fahrenheit, not Celsius. And I got a thermal warning at the end of shooting a couple minutes of 4K 120 frame per second slow-mo. But that was at the end of the day. So I shot all of my flowers, all my close-ups. I did some walking tests. I shot a bunch of little 4K video snippets. The screen has to crank because it's not the brightest OLED, so it's max display on the screen the entire time. It was around 85 degrees, I want to say. And then I got to the end of that day, and I had to shoot my 4K slow-motion samples, and that's when I got my first thermal warning. So it handily outpaced the Pixel 4a. I got a thermal warning on the 4a sooner than I did on my Sony. I don't know, comparably, I would still say Sony's probably a step behind for thermal performance than like a Samsung or an LG. I'm pretty sure I can run a V60 harder for shooting 4K 60 frame per second video. But those days where, like my first review of a Sony for Pocket Now was an XZ, where if I shot 5 minutes of HD video directly under an air conditioning vent, the phone would shut off. It wasn't even just a thermal warning. The phone would black screen and say the phone is running too hot. And that's with 5 minutes of video. And that's not going outside. I haven't had those kinds of issues with Sony in years. And especially from the Xperia 1 to the Xperia 1 Mark II, and now the Xperia 5, there's a whole new like graphene sheet that kind of spreads heat out from the battery. And this is the sort of top module for all of your motherboard and processor stuff. The only time it gets really hot is when you run the camera hard And there's like a little hotspot right above this NFC label. And it got up to around 105 degrees on me running a really long, like 6 minutes of video, 4K 60 frame per second video. That got a little hot, but the phone didn't warn me. It didn't thermal throttle. The video came out without any dropped frames. It's much better behaved than it used to be. I'm not sure what Nam is trying to ask. Does the Xperia 5 Mark II soft, which made Xperia 1 Mark II screen seem a little snappier? I'm not entirely sure what you're asking, but that is a major difference between the two. The Xperia 5 just feels more fluid. The trick of using black frame insertion on the Xperia 1 is kind of handy. It does kind of help these interactions feel a little snappier, but it's not a true high refresh rate display. As soon as you put them side by side, if you care about the most crisp fluid look to your menus and scrolling, then the Xperia 5 is going to win every time. If you're like me and you like to put your font to the absolute smallest pixel pitch and you like seeing the detail and clarity in high resolution media side by side, I don't have the best eyesight and I can see a difference between the two. So it really is to me like, do you want the better graphics display for art or do you want the better gaming display for speed? I think most of the people in my comments would probably say 1080p is fine, but give me the faster refresh. I feel like the most pixel dense display on a phone ever is worthy of some consideration for folks out there who might appreciate, you know, clarity and super, super fine detail. A bunch of folks talking about the Fold 2. Fold 2 has shattered the space-time continuum. Some YouTuber probably. I'm a bit more positive on the Fold 2 as some kind of expensive flex phone, a media consumption phone. It's just been so refreshing playing with a couple different options. And if Samsung is going to improve it and iterate on it, that's great. I feel the commentary is overblown because of YouTube, because of the YouTube algorithm. Like, we're done with the Note. The Note got almost no conversation, but the Fold is like being wowed over. Okay, sure. We're really concerned about average consumers, but here, let me show you how amazing this $2,000 folding tablet is. Okay. All right. So again, I kind of got sidetracked there. Vazicos 8 asking, does it shoot bursts in RAW? It does not. Dave Burns, if it was 80 degrees Celsius, the world would be ending. Saeed, two more questions. What does it look like connecting a Rode Wireless Go to either Xperia phone? So I've been having a little issue. The Rode cables are TRS, tip ring sleeve. They don't seem to trip the headphone microphone jack on Sony's reliably. I have to do this thing where I kind of pull them out and then they don't really record properly. So I'm trying to see if I can mess with a different cable or with a TRRS adapter to get that working on an Xperia. Right now, the mics that have worked the most reliably are actually the Samsung. Samsung makes some wireless transmitters, and those have been working really, really well. The other issue with the Rode is it's built for a hot shoe. So the little clips that you can use to clip them to your clothing fit the hot shoe on cameras really well. And there's no way to do that on a phone. For example, here's my Comica. Come on. Too much crap on my desk. So this is the Comica receiver, and it's got these grips so that you can slot a phone in and then clamp the phone to the receiver. And then you're running a TRRS cable to the headphone jack or to the camera. That's kind of the solution I would recommend on a Sony. One, because the button layout is kind of perfect for it. Having all of your buttons on one side makes it a little easier to use mounts. The Xperia 5, no exception. The Google Assistant button is really well flush. Here, let me hold this up and let me see if I can focus. So the press photos make this look like it really sticks out. It's almost featurelessly flush with the phone. So using my Jobby, the little mount that kind of clamps around the phone like that, doesn't trigger the Google Assistant button. That's really handy. It's very helpful. So you can still kind of mount that kind of stuff that way. It's one of the tricky things is if you're running gun, like when I'm walking around, I can kind of only count on being able to use one hand. So that's why I love these little wireless lavs. I love having a receiver that becomes a part of the phone mount so that I don't have to have something else dangling or attached. It's a little more streamlined. To me, that's a little bit more functional. JJ4884, I'm surprised Samsung does not have much concern about heat since the Note 7 issues. Didn't TK Bay, what's his name? The other TK in tech. Didn't his Note 20 just explode or melt down or something like that? I thought I saw a video in my feed where he said like his Note like liquefied or something. If I were Samsung, I would also still be very concerned about thermals. Oh, and my Xperia didn't get up to 105 degrees Celsius. It was 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Not that hot. I mean, again, that's warm. You can definitely feel it. That is toasty. But the phone did it great. HDMI output, can it output a video editing app in full screen to make editing easier? Well, let's take a look. Who wants to take a look at a Sony potentially using some kind of video output? Anyone? Does anyone want to see this? I can probably do this in real time. Let me just make sure I don't have any pern up on my phone screen. I don't do that with the review devices. And let's plug this in. And ha-ha! So here's the Xperia 5. Anyone want to see anything specific? I'm going to fire up PowerDirector. Do-do-do. Boo-do-boo-boo. I want to make sure I turn off the volume. Let's edit a project. We can kind of scrub our timeline. Yeah, this is looking like it's doing screen share just fine. It also does have support for some of those, like, I forget what they're called, but you can go in and do screen mirroring, and you can do that wirelessly. So you can send your display to another, like, TV or monitor. That doesn't always work reliably, depending on what your setup is. Like, it can't see my Chromecasts, but it can see my Samsung TV. Render speeds are great. You've got HS power control, so you're not running the battery hot when you do individual apps like video editing and rendering. I can fire up a game. Let's do Implosion. You won't be able to see it, but I'm seeing Implosion at 120 hertz, so that's pretty cool. While I kind of look through couple other questions here, why don't we I'll do my campaign. I love just showing off the first boss. I think the first boss is still one of the most fun bosses in Implosion, and I'll do my leveled up guy so that he can kill it real fast. I mean, you don't even see the loading screens on this game anymore. That's just nuts. But yeah, I don't have it paired up at the moment, but it hooked up immediately with my DualShock, my PlayStation 4 controller. Had it docked in a little cradle, and it was it's just an absolutely great gaming and multimedia experience. I wish I could show this off better, like not in a stream, but this is the most fluid I think I've ever seen this game play. I just got blasted with fire breath. Ah, fire breath. Now I shoot you more. Pew 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 pew. Haha, and now you are exhausted from your efforts in fire breath, and I shall slash your face. Slash, 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 slash. This is awful podcasting for people on the audio version of the show. So I do apologize for that. But I killed the guy, and now he is falling off this cliff. Haha, I win again. I have played this boss way too many times. So yeah, HDMI looks great. And again, you... you hook it up with a PlayStation, a DualShock, and you could Nintendo Switch this, you know, plug it into a TV and play, and it's great. It works real well. The only thing I wish Sony did that, as far as I know, only LG does. So if you'll pardon just the quick plug for an LG product, LG will reframe your phone display to fit the aspect ratio of the monitor you plug into it. So LGs, I think, are still the only ones that are monitor resolution, monitor aspect ratio aware. So if it detects that you're plugging it into a TV, it'll say, hey, do you want to reformat to 16:9? And you get goofy, you know, letterboxing on your phone screen, but it's formatted so that it fits the TV perfectly. Because this is 21:9, and I don't have a 21:9 TV, I kind of wish Sony would do something similar. Like, that'd be kind of cool if you could pick how it would screen share to better match the television or the monitor. But I wouldn't say that's a huge deal breaker. From Bray Gray, you definitely need the TRRS. I use it with my Xperia 1 Mark II. I kind of figured that's what the issue was. The Rodes, they are correct. It is tip ring sleeve for left channel, right channel ground. But a lot of our mobile devices and cameras expect TRRS instead. Matt Tyler, how did the speaker sound compared to the Xperia 1 Mark II? Very similar. Both in good ways and in bad ways. But true stereo, they don't do any of that obnoxious portrait. You know, in portrait mode, it's mono. In landscape mode, it's stereo. They're really decently matched. I don't think they're perfectly matched, but they're much closer than many of the other earpiece and bottom-firing speakers, and they both point in the correct direction. So when you look at the bottom of a Sony, there aren't any bumps or holes on the bottom because the chin bezel has a vent so that the sound kind of points more towards your face. That's correct. I'm way behind on all these comments and stuff. Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. From ER1980, in relation to 5G, I would not be too concerned as 4G speeds are improving as the fiber backhaul is being improved as part of the 5G rollout, which is leading to much improved and better 4G speeds. That is a positive perk of firing up fiber to these data centers. I just feel when it comes to tower maintenance and radio connectivity, we're probably going to see way more invested in getting those 5G signals out. So over 2 to 3 years, LTE still stands to improve. It's just we're not going to see focused improvements on LTE. They're only going to be ancillary improvements because of other technologies being improved. We'll see 5G really push the rollout. But again, to that same token, we just saw a press release or a story posted, like T-Mobile saying in 2 to 3 years, for all of the different bands of 5G that we'll need to support, you'll probably need to buy new phones anyway. So this current implementation of 5G is going to be sort of our most basic. And then for improved capabilities beyond that, our current phones won't support it anyway. So while I'm concerned, I think 5G should be a concern. It's not one that I think is a deal breaker concern, even in a situation like mine, where the only signal I can reliably get in the gadget lab is T-Mobile 5G. I don't get good AT&T reception. I get mediocre Verizon reception. It's T-Mo, and it's T-Mo 5G, not T-Mo LTE, which is hilarious. I mean, the 5G tower must be like right there. But again, I'm still only getting like a 40 meg download. It's not fast. Dave Burns, scrubbing that video is really smooth. It is really smooth. It's pretty great. Nick Fell, can you rebind the assistant button? Not at present. There isn't a setting that I can find on the phone, but I'd be very surprised if someone didn't come up with a solution or a third-party app to figure that out. some commentary on 21:9 and cinema wide. Movies look great on both phones, although I do have a couple 21:9 4K Blu-ray rips. I think they look better on the Xperia 1. Frame rate, refresh rate doesn't help you if you're watching a lot of content. From Pac Main, this is not pre-recorded. This is a live show. I'm just very slow at catching up with the live chat. From B1RK, I'm going to say Burke Art, if I'm looking at your name as LeetSpeak. Sorry if I missed your answer, but what do you like more, full HD at 120 or 4K at 60? For the displays, I have long been a resolution snob. All the way back to like the very earliest days of quad HD, when we started getting phones with 2560 by 1440, you can find videos of me saying we should just move to 4K. That has been my peak mobile device resolution. I mean, basically since I started a YouTube channel. Now, there's a reason for that. Mathematically, if you chart the resolving capability of the human eye, a person with 20/20 vision focusing at the minimum focusing distance, when we extrapolate the arc minutes of the human eye's clarity, the ability for the average, you know, sort of 20/20 vision individual, we arrive at a resolution very similar to UHD on around a 5.5 to 6 inch screen, kind of a phablet-y screen. At that point, there is really no benefit for pushing beyond 4K on a mobile device. Because also, we're not often holding a phone at our minimum focusing distance. But there are people who have better than 20/20 vision, and there are people who actually can improve upon their vision by through the use of magnification, like glasses and contact lenses. And if we have a super pixel dense display that the human eye cannot really, at any tier, at any visual acuity, at any distance, at any proximity to the human face, then we're done. We're done at 4K. And that is the clearest image that we can resolve for any human eye, for any consumer. That to me becomes the last like premium marketing point. We're finished. Game over. We can improve the backlighting. We can improve the refresh rate. We can make things a little smoother, a little crisper. But at that point, there really isn't a human on the planet that we need to be concerned about for visual acuity. And that's why I want to get to 4K and just be done with it and just say, like, that's the gig. Especially with better and more dynamic scaling. Because for 120 hertz, even though the Xperia 5 and the Xperia 1 have roughly the same size battery, high refresh rate seems to eat a lot more battery than high resolution. So remember back in the day, everyone was like, oh, well, quad HD, and that's going to take a toll on your battery life. And 1080p is fine. And 4K, you just have no battery life. It just get nuked. But then they'd ignore the fact that like those Sony Ultras actually got really good battery life. Even these 4K screens did just fine. And we're in the same situation here. That smoother, the ability to have a slightly smoother app drawer and a little bit more fluid of a look for video gameplay comes at a significant, a trackable hit to your battery life. And it's not dissimilar from firing up a dual display. So two screens at 60 frames per second, two screens at 60 hertz, easily preferable to me than one screen at 120. I can do way more damage on a dual display. But it's a little bit more nuanced when we're talking resolution to hertz and frame rate. From Dave Byrne, so is 8K kind of dumb? I think so. I mean, maybe there's an argument to be made for properly setting up a home theater experience where you have measured to the millimeter where your audience is going to sit for the most premium, bestest. I think it's a humongous diminishing return. I think 8K is the footage that we shoot for the raw data, and then we finish it in something like 4K. And I'll be shocked. I haven't seen any footage or content in 8K that I really thought, like, oh, this is going to change my mind. Or I'm going to put my nose right up against a TV. That's not how we consume content. And I still, like, you know, if you were looking at like a home theater setup, you know, you'd still be looking, a lot of people still look at projectors and, you know, how you resolve an image. Shooting beams of light at a screen is different than when it's organically making the image and the light and blasting that into your eyes. I'm not hyped on 8K as a consumer standard. I am interested in 8K and beyond as a content creation standard and what we can do for raw video. That's not what I want to watch. That's not what I think is going to be a big perk or convince me that I need to flip my TV. Ooh, this is a great question from Burkhart. What do you want? Oh, sorry, just the live chat just jumped on me. Where'd it go? I'm curious, what do you want Sony to implement in the Mark III's? Okay, so if I'm using the, because I've spent way more time with the Xperia 1 Mark II than the Xperia 5, but I like this division. I like having a phone that's maybe a little bit more broadly positioned towards video, like both watching it and creating it. A slightly larger screen, I think a better button layout and a better placement for controls, a flatter, harder edged design. The corners and the sides on the Xperia 5 are a little more rounded and it feels nice in the hand. But I like the practicality of the slab that you get on the Xperia 1. Sorry, answering your question. Dividing these two and kind of playing them against each other, I'd like them to maintain those subtle differences. The Xperia 5 can be our gaming phone and the Xperia 1 can be our content phone. And I like that. I wouldn't be upset if we got 4K 60 again next year, but I'd really like to see them improve the brightness. This is this has to be one of the most expensive OLEDs to manufacture for being so pixel dense. It could do with some better brightness. It could improve a bit there. Little minor things, like I've been griping, I wish Sony cameras had focus peaking so that you could see an outline around what parts of your subject are in focus. Sony's autofocus is so scary good that in an off-the-cuff moment, you're not going to care. The butterfly photo, that's Sony autofocus at play. I mean, it's really good. But if I'm shooting a video and I'm trying to critically focus on something very specific, it's a little hard to see on a phone screen if I'm nailing that critical focus. Focus peaking would be nice. I'd love to see an expansion for the power control options. HS power control does not work with the Sony camera app. It would be great if I could plug a Sony into a power source and run the camera without it hitting the battery. That would be huge for managing thermals if you're shooting out in the field. The biggie, this is huge. it's not necessarily the phones. And in fact, this is something Sony could do tomorrow. I am shocked that no company has iterated on the idea of making camera lenses for their phones. On the Xperia 1, and less so on the Xperia 1 Mark II, there was this little mini cottage industry of people that were printing, 3D printing their own cases so that you could attach ND filters and other lens accessories. And Sony needs to lead that conversation. So it's nice that it's got an ultra-wide. The ultra-wide and the zoom, the telephoto lens, they're good. They're phone good. But the main camera sensor is so much better. I just want to shoot everything off of the main camera sensor. And then I kind of fall back when I absolutely need something wider or I need something with a little more reach. I need Sony to make a case with a little bayonet mount and give us lenses built specifically for their camera sensors. I need LG to do that. I need Samsung to do that. It's one of those critical oversights where I can plug this into audio. I can plug this into power. I can get like a cradle or a mount. I can get like a whole like cage chamber if I want to use it as a camera for that. Just the last couple steps on making it more of a camera and having that modularity would be huge. I saw that Vazico's a DIY Perks on YouTube made a 4K projector using an old 4K screen from a Sony phone. Yeah, I love seeing like, I wish I were better at hacking gadgets like that. It's pretty cool. So this show's already run a little long, but I did want to spend a couple minutes. We can wrap this podcast up chatting Samsung because I really feel... Oh, see, this is like a great point. So Geet Madden, Moment is going to go out of business if they don't make phone lenses. You know, I the Moment lenses are cool. I've got a Rhino Shield, a macro lens on a Rhino Shield. That's really good. I have some Oppo lenses that are just clip-on. One of the major problems is Sony, and I mean to the same degree, like a OnePlus, an LG V60, a Galaxy S20, this new 12-megapixel camera sensor is so much larger that those older wide-angle and macro lenses don't really work. So if I clip a clip-on macro lens to this, it changes the focal length and the resolving capabilities of this lens so severely that there is almost no plane of focus, that the plane of what's in focus is so razor thin that I really can't use it. And so that's why I feel like Sony needs to make something specifically. Like I'd love to have better macro capabilities to get right on top of something. And then I'd love to have something that uses this gorgeous main sensor. And it's okay if it bulges out, right? It's bayonet locked into a case and it sticks out kind of goofy. That's not going to go in my pocket. You don't need to convince average consumers that they need to have that. But I could have Sony glass on top of Sony glass with a lot more reach. That would be epic to use this main sensor. The 12-megapixel sensor on this is really good, especially the combination of amazing autofocus and great low light capabilities would be huge. But anyway, sorry. Moments were made for smaller camera sensors. They were made for iPhones, right? So Moments started when Apple was using like a 1/3-inch sensor, you know, just a garbage, small, mini, baby camera sensor. I'd really love to see, well, I really want Sony to do it, but I'd love to see any manufacturer come up and say, hey, if you've got a V60, if you've got a Galaxy S20, if you've got a Note 20, if you've got an Xperia, you have a completely different sensor size. And so you need something that's going to change the focal length for those cameras, not for the little inky dinky camera sensors we used to use. Or Nick Fell, how about a case that just adapts actual camera lenses? Would be cool too. I mean, that'd be great. You just use your phone as the brain of a photography solution. And we already know it's got the right software for it. You know, like that's ready to go. You have the Sony Alpha shooting experience pretty much baked into this. it wouldn't take much. It really wouldn't. I mean, those mounts and those clip-on lenses and everything, like they're never super popular, but you make that a limited edition and you keep your expectations low. It would be expensive accessories, but you'd have people out there that could make a real good run on using that kind of kit. Anyway, more videos coming, Xperia 5 Mark II versus Xperia 1 Mark II. That video is going to be out on Wednesday. I'm going to be finishing up the camera deep dive for both. I'm just going to combine the Xperia 1 and the Xperia 5 for one of the biggest camera reviews I've ever done. There's going to be an audio deep dive just talking about the speakers and headphone performance. I'm going to have a lot more to say about the Xperia 5 as we close out. I have to send it back in a couple days as we close out my short-term loaner. So it's just kind of cool getting to spend some time with it early because it's a really special phone. But I want to close this podcast out. Like I said, Samsung, I think, deserves some kudos and some credit, even though I have some concerns over their product portfolio. But we got a little news on the Galaxy S20 FE edition. I've got the Samsung website up here. A big play is that it's just coming in a bunch of pretty colors. It's got a very, to me, it looks a little like a velvet, you know, the colors to the side rail, to the way that it scoops on one side with curved glass. But the Galaxy S20 FE, we shave off a few of the more premium features of a Galaxy S20, and we arrive at a phone that's a little bit cheaper. So a 5G capable device with a Snapdragon 865, a really solid 12 megapixel main sensor. I believe it's the same 12 megapixel sensor that's in the regular Galaxy S20. More traditional zoom and wide angles, with all the low light modes. And we're looking at a full pre-order price of $699, $700. $700, and Samsung, I think, has a pretty solid shot at what we might see against phones like a Pixel 5. So, Matt Tyler, no, Juan, you are wrong. The Velvet copied the FE Samsung Knights rule. So I broke it down, and props to GSM Arena so that I don't have to catalog all of the specs. We're still looking at IP68, but the back of the FE is going to be plastic. The front is going to be an older version of Gorilla Glass, so probably a slightly less good version of the glass on the front. We obviously bumped down the resolution of the display, where the Galaxy S20 had the 1440p, we're down to 1080p. But the FE is going to be slightly larger than the base model Galaxy S20. What we got, 6 gigabytes of RAM, 128 gigabytes of storage on the base model. It is using the same main camera sensor, the same 12 megapixel camera sensor. It is using a slightly better selfie camera though. So the Galaxy S20 had that 10 megapixel shooter, and now we're moving over to the 32 quad Bayer sensor. So it's a little bit larger. Your final photos are going to be slightly lower resolution, but I think this is going to be better for low light, and then also it'll probably be a little bit better for video too. No headphone jack because Samsung is dumb, and no mention of things like DeX. So GSM Arena isn't detailing whether or not this is going to have USB 3 or if it's going to be USB 2 on a USB on the go. And it is going to have a bigger battery than the base model Galaxy S20. These are all the right plays. The thing that makes me a little concerned is how widely varied Samsung's product portfolio is now. When I saw FE, that makes me a little twitchy just because FE was the designation that we used for the Note that exploded. So to me, that's like when Samsung goofs, you get an FE. And I understand why they're not calling it a Lite, because it's kind of not. You know, when you got a Snapdragon 865 in there, it's not really a light version of a Galaxy S20. It's just a slightly less feature rich and a cheaper to manufacture version of a Galaxy S20. And I think for a lot of folks out there that are going to see these pop up in carrier stores
as we're getting into the end of the year, you know, carriers still try to charge full price for a lot of their customers. So you're going to walk by a Galaxy S20 at $999, and then the slightly larger Galaxy S20 is going to be $699. Well, how about that? I'll go with the cheaper one, and it's probably just as good. And I'd be shocked if many consumers shopping through carrier stores would likely detect those nuanced differences between the two. So when we're talking about a $200 to $300 MSRP difference, I'm very positive on what Samsung is trying to do here. I think it's a little misleading. I think it's a little bit of marketing chicanery, but I think this is better than what we often get from Samsung when they try and give us a light version. And it's a little bit easier to place this. I think it makes Samsung's lineup too busy, but it is easier to place this than, say, a Galaxy A71 versus an S20 Lite on a lesser powerful processor, and then an S20, and then an overlap, and then another gadget, and another gadget. This, to me, fits in a little bit better for keeping the same chipset as the regular Galaxy S20. So I feel like this is more deserving of being called an S20 than a Lite version would have last year. I think that was probably more misleading than this. This, I think, is a truer representation of the Galaxy experience for a little bit less money. Dave Burns, I forgot all about the Note 7 FE. They didn't call it the Note 7 FE. They called it the Note FE. There was no Note 7. Goran Petrovic, fun edition. They listened to their fans, yet no 3.5 millimeter on the FE. Samsung's not going to bring that back because it's, you make too much money making people buy Bluetooth earbuds. And all the people that are willing to just like, oh yeah, I got the new Galaxy Buds Live and they're so super great. They're fine. Bazicos 8, the FE is competitive with the upcoming OnePlus 8T. So let me throw this out here. Probably a bit more feature rich. Has reverse wireless charging and a larger battery. Galaxy S20 FE coming in, what, $200 cheaper than my precious and beloved Xperia 5 Mark II? I would say we're in good territory for some fun competition. You know, again, different criteria for what makes a premium phone premium, but you've got United States 5G versus a headphone jack. You've got, very similar cameras for telephoto and ultra wide, very similar main sensor performance. A battery bump on the FE, which the battery's a little smaller on the Xperia, but the Xperia is probably going to have better long-term power management, and HS power control is super cool. It's an interesting fight, you know? Samsung is kicking in with a parts bin, and they're playing a game kind of like Oppo, where they've just got a bunch of stuff, and they can kind of throw a bunch of stuff together, and they can arrive at a ridiculous spectrum of parts to pricing. So if they're reading the room and the S20 didn't sell as well as expected and the Note 20 vanished from the conversation really quickly, hitting a price performance ratio on a more razor thin margin brings us back to a Samsung that I think is a lot more interesting to talk about. From Matt Tyler, but the standard S20 is cheaper than the FE, so that's already fighting. One of the reasons why I'm more positive on the FE isn't for people that are in this chat right now. People in this chat right now are going to be way savvier about shopping a sale or doing a trade-in. It does not break through the gadget commentary, and it needs to be a bigger part of the gadget commentary. Right now, someone is walking into a carrier store and is looking at a Galaxy S20 Plus and is going to be on the hook for the full original retail MSRP. That is the consumer that is affected by these types of business decisions. They might not have the credit for a special deal or a plan. They might not have a trade-in to get a reduced price. They might have missed, you know, some Labor Day weekend sale where they could have gotten a BOGO. Someone right now is going to buy a phone that was launched in February or March, and they're going to pay full price at the end of the year on a phone that we know isn't really worth that. That MSRP comparison is vitally critical because we price phones high so that we can do sales and we can do trade-ins and still make profits. You just make less profits. We are not the good consumers for tech manufacturers and carriers because we are the ones that are most savvily trying to put together the absolute lowest price for a tech purchase. Think of your aunts and uncles. Think of your family and friends. Think about all those times someone comes to you after they've purchased the phone and they didn't talk to you first. Like, I've got family members that are still picking up iPhone 11 Pros today. They don't have it on their radar that the iPhone 12 is right around the corner. $999 for the smaller 64 gig iPhone 11 Pro is still a thing, right? That would be a really bad time to buy that. So that's the game. The FE is going to be propped up. Full MSRP compared to full MSRP is a better buy for the gross majority of people that do their shopping through that kind of carrier relationship. Gary the fireman, I still see people with 5GE on AT&T. Come on, man. Well, Muppinish, hello, everyone. How long have we been running? We're at 2.5 hours, so it is time to pack this up. I am super busy. I'm going to have phone videos and accessory videos. I got to get back to writing. Tomorrow on the Patreon, I'm going to put out a post calling for suggestions for game night. So if you have some ideas on fun party style games that more than four people can play at a time, please, please, please check out patreon.com/somegadgetguy and drop comments there, because I'll lose them if you share in a live chat or you hit me up on Twitter. I need them to be in one place so we can sort that out. And I really want to make that a regular thing where we can all get together, play some games or watch some movies and be goofy. And I might even have a bourbon while we do it. But, you know, drink responsibly in this era of social distancing and sheltering in place. Folks, I am having so much fun with these alternative phones. This is the time of year I love the most. You know, Techtober, sure iPhone, sure Samsung. But when I'm moving back and forth between a Surface Duo, picking up, I still have this Black Shark that I need to do something with. I feel so bad. TK loaned me this phone like a month ago, 2 months ago now, and I still haven't done anything with it. I mean, done any videos on it. But when I'm moving back and forth between all of the different players and really getting the sense of specific flavors, specific use cases, and different consumers would like different features, that to me is what made tech so exciting. And we're getting back to that. You know, firing up a video on the wing, looking at a Galaxy FE at a price savings, playing the price performance ratio, considering how good the iPhone SE is, and we can move all of these different parts around at different prices. That's what this should be all about. There are no winners and losers. There is no such thing as an average consumer to protect. Do you want a phone that works more like a camera? Do you want a phone that will blow your ears away with the most premium audio quality? Do you want the phone that can turn into a proper computer when you connect it to a monitor? Do you want the tablet that can kind of be a phone, but then takes you into multitasking on steroids? Different people need different things, and we've got to stop selling them the same slab of phone over and over and over again. So, as always, this live chat always refuels me for the week, because these are the kinds of conversations I absolutely adore. And I want to wrap this up. I don't run a lot of contests on my channel. Contests are very complicated and they take a lot of time and effort and energy. So when some of my friends are running contests, I like to try and shout them out. But if you've been following the dynamic duo of Sam and Matt on Across the Pondcast, you might have noticed that they're hosting an international giveaway for a PlayStation 5. PS5, baller monster computer, what lives under your TV to play the games, and you could win one from two dudes starting up their own podcast and building their own community and starting up their own channel and doing it right, because they're a goofy duo of guys and they're really fun to listen to. They had another stream over the weekend, and if you missed it, then you missed a really fun tech conversation. So you can catch, Sam Matt Pondcast? I can't remember what your Twitter handle is, Matt. I'm so sorry. But Matt Tyler in the live chat, and I'll try and remember to include a link in the show notes if you want to check that out. But PS5, if you want one, they're going to give one away. I hear it's the cool thing what all the hip kids are using. So, Sam and Matt 20 is the Twitter handle. Go check them out. Get your chance to go win a PlayStation. So, folks, thank you so much for joining me on this rambling, overly coffee-fueled conversation about technology. This was probably the most fun I've had in a while, covering a gadget block, just for bouncing back and forth as manically as I have been between all these different phones. So I'm glad enough of you followed the thread on this to also seem to enjoy this conversation. I want all of you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I want everyone out there to still stay safe. We're trying to figure out what the new normal is going to be, but it's still really crazy out there. And so I hope everyone's back next week and that we have another conversation like this and we can get goofy and wacky and we can call each other out. So be well and take care. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.